This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here at InfoSec with Dave McGrail, Head of Business Consultancy at Xaliant, and we're going to talk about identity and AI. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Ian. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us a bit about yourself and Xaliant.
I've been with Xaliant nearly 9 years now. I'm a trusted advisor and strategic partner to execs across our global customer base. My main concern is bridging the gap between technology transformation and business outcomes. That's acting as a trusted advisor with those customers, taking them on a journey to make sure that they're not just left with a bunch of technology that doesn't give them the benefits and outcomes that they're looking for as a business.
But isn't that the whole point of the last 40 years for most companies? All this technology that delivers not what they thought it would?
It is, absolutely. There are more and more vendors, and there are more and more buzzwords, and it's more and more difficult to navigate the growing amount of technology and capability that there is out there. It's difficult not to just buy into hype. There's a lot of buzzwords, there's a lot of buzzword bingo out there, and if we take things like zero trust, terms like that have been misappropriated by the industry, and it's easy to be sold a product rather than a journey.
So when you say misappropriated, what do you mean?
Not necessarily picking on zero trust. It's one that I'm very close to. As a term, we know it's a security paradigm. It's an approach to delivering security change and improving posture and reducing attack surface. And there are plenty of vendors out there that are happy to sell you quantity one times zero trust. And we sell you the license and then that's it, job done. You've got zero trust. And that's just not the truth. The other side of it is all of this transformation needs to be right-sized to the business and the outcomes they're looking to achieve. And looking at that as a journey, there's all sorts to achieve within zero trust, whether it's identity transformation, whether it's networks, whether it's cybersecurity, whether it's data posture security management, whether it's introduction of AI to try and automate and accelerate some of that transformation. But businesses are ready for certain elements of that transformation at different times based on where they are within a budget cycle, where they might be in terms of investment from outside investors and what they might be trying to achieve from either a cost-saving drive or a growth drive. That journey can be difficult to navigate, and one of the things we like to help with at Xaliant is helping navigate the priorities to achieve those outcomes.
I've been around the business a few days. One of the things we still don't have a handle on is identity. If we look in our environment, 97% of our identities in Active Directory are non-human identities. Many of them are old hangovers. They're a machine identity for a printer or a scanner, or they're a piece of software we installed 20 years ago that needed an admin account in order to function and has never had its password changed because nobody dared change it because they don't know what it will break. We're moving to AI that's going to require identity for every single agent. How do we, as an industry, approach identity as a core function and start to get it right? Because it's clearly broken.
It is, and it's something that's been neglected for a long time. Largely, identity hasn't been seen as an IT problem or as even a security problem. It's been a corner case that often sits with a CISO budget and is a nice to have until there's a breach and all of a sudden people decide that we should put some focus on it, similar as it's always been for infrastructure and disaster recovery. And the starting point really is around understanding where your risk is, what your assets are, and then understanding where those risky assets are and approach those first to understand how you can make the biggest difference there.
But with respect, we've had that conversation for at least the last 20, 30 years that I've been around this industry. And we are no further advanced on that conversation in terms of improving security than we have been. Look at the number of leaked credentials. Look at the continuous number of breaches. Much of this is identity driven.
Absolutely. At Xaliant, we've recognised that. As a business, we've been on a journey of working primarily in the network and security space, and we've been on a journey now to move that towards identity driven network and security transformation. You're right in that it's been neglected and there's been the same rhetoric there as before. And ultimately, the number of breaches that are occurring and it becoming evident that it's identity is driving a priority around that now. There's more focus on it. things like regulatory requirements to admit that these things have happened, needing to tell the ICO that these things have happened, is meaning that more people are talking about the fact that they've breached and why to the forefront. There's more appetite now to start working down that route. The other side of it as well is it's becoming easier to have a conversation about how identity can become a business enabler rather than just a security conversation.
So what makes identity an enabler?
From my perspective, we see identity as an enabler for things like M&A activity.
How does that fit an M&A activity?
Some of it comes back to things like supply chain as well. But if you're acquiring a business and you don't quite know what you're going to get, the legacy approach has been, let's join the networks, let's connect them with a VPN, discover that we need to do some IP harmonization, panic, try and deal with that, and after 6 months we've still not got any of the value of the acquisition. The reality is that the technologies that are out there now, if we want to call it Zero Trust Network Access, are a way of creating some distance between the two businesses from a security standpoint, but still allowing people to access those resources as they need to.
I can see legions of infrastructure managers at the moment with their faces in their hand just going, yes, that's my everyday.
Yeah, it happens a lot. Those technologies are there in terms of, if we want to call it Zero Trust Network Access, fine. These identity-aware access brokers drive segregation between resources and users, but still allow the appropriate access. The starting point for that clearly is identity. Understanding who somebody is, what the group memberships are, what role they play, what's appropriate access for them. The other side of it, and when we get into non-human identities as well, where the interesting stuff comes in, is it's easy to look at whether somebody should have access to something, but more importantly, what are they doing with that access once they've been granted that?
But is that not part of our problem? We started with role-based access back in the mid-80s, early 90s, as we started to refine what was going to be our dominant networks. And the problem with role-based access is people just acquire roles. They get memberships of groups. They don't know why they're in there. They don't know what they're going to do. When they change job, they get another batch of stuff. They never give it up because we all think, oh yeah, well, for 3 months you can hold that, so it'll be a handover, then we'll remove it. Very, very few organisations have an effective process to revoke roles. How do we fix role-based access, and why are we not using attribute-based access?
That's where I was going to go next, is the clear evolution of role-based is attributes. And interestingly, listening to John Kindervag speak yesterday about Zero Trust, he mentioned you can talk about that problem with two words, Manning and Snowden. And he's absolutely right. And people look at the JML process, the joiner, mover, leaving process. Everybody focuses on joiners and getting them up to speed and getting value out of a new starter quickly. Everybody's most scared about leavers because people leave a business and we don't want them still have access. The reality is movers can be as dangerous, if not more dangerous, because of that cumulative access. The reality of how we can approach fixing that is the move towards more modern privileged access management and information identity governance and administration type technologies, continuous attestation about whether that access is relevant, so that it's not just a one-time grandfathered access list, a set of access to applications. Actually, it's continually assessed to make sure it's still appropriate.
But we've tried to find a solution to that, and that's been to use HR. HR knows who joins, HR knows when people move, HR know when people leave, probably far more so than anybody else in the business because they pay them, they control all of those physical accesses to the building. But the problem is nobody knows what applications they need for their job role. This has always been a challenge as far back as I can remember in the early 80s when I started in this business, from when I ran a training company and talked to people about this stuff. Nobody knew what they needed to do their job. How can we therefore continue to rely on something that is role-based when role depends upon the applications and the stuff I use if I don't know what you use?
We have to go beyond HR and do more work with the business. IGA isn't an IT problem, it's a business challenge. We have to shift away from IT and HR driving access to platforms and business owners taking ownership for their applications, their data, the risk associated with them, having a structured way of them contributing to what's appropriate access for a role and what the attributes that drive that access, so that ultimately it can be administered by IT, but it's very much a business challenge when it comes to understanding that access.
I said at the beginning we would talk about AI and identity. One of the reasons this part of the conversation is really important is because most people's view of agentic AI is that the agent will inherit what rights I have when I task it.
There's two ways of viewing agentic identity. Either it takes on the identity of the person interacting with it, or it has its own identity, and arguably, I would suggest it needs both. At times acting on its own, at times it's leveraging the identity and the access of the person that's interacting with it.
When it picks up from the person that it's interacting with, the view seems to be it will get all my rights because it's going to do jobs for me that I would otherwise do, and this is about better automation and better time management for me. And to a degree, that makes sense. There are issues. All the way we track misuse of an identity suddenly becomes a problem because I have two objects now acting as one individual, potentially 5, 6, 7, depending on how many agents I task. They also operate at a much higher speed and in a different time zone to me because they'll run overnight. So all my security controls, all the ways I assess a bad user, now don't work. How do we reset what we now see as acceptable end user behavior so that we can begin to assess that's actually an agent you've tasked and that's actually you, that's doing what we would expect it to do. Actually, that agent over there, what is it doing? We don't seem to have a way to pick that up at the moment.
That's a good point. There needs to be something around an agent exposing that it's acting on behalf of somebody so that it's a combination of its identity and the user it's acting on behalf of. From my perspective, that's one of the key ways forward.
So if we give an agent its own identity, how do we give it permissions to do stuff? Because I'm not going to know what that agent's going to need to do when I'm creating the agent. So somebody will sit there, create 200 agents, give them all an identity and say they're available for people to use. They're your virtual workers. But at some point, I've got to give them rights and permissions if they're not going to inherit from the person who then tasks them. How do we begin to set that level of access control? Should it be role? Should it be attribute? Do we need something new?
We've got to be really careful about how we architect those agent frameworks and how much you ask an agent to do. We potentially end up with more agents than we were initially expecting, and there's more segregation of duties between those agents that ultimately then builds up into something that's more structured and productive. But there's some ring fencing, there's some guardrails between agents in terms of what they can and can't do. Ultimately, those agents should have similar roles and attributes to a human identity. They still have those same attributes. We still have an understanding that certain agents can access certain things in the same way that a human identity can. The model still works, but we've got to apply some of those previous controls to those agents, and that segregation of duty is key.
One of the fears I have here is somebody will come along initially and say, okay, I'm going to create a bunch of agents for the sales team. And they'll attempt to work out what permissions somebody in the sales team would need. They can't really look at everybody in the sales team because, of course, some of those people have permissions that are completely irrelevant. They sensibly limit the permissions. But then along comes somebody in the sales team who needs it to do something outside of that limited set of permissions. So there has to be an uplift moment. What processes are you seeing companies looking at where they create contained agents that people can utilize and then give them the ability to uplift, and a very contained and controlled uplift of permissions to do additional tasks?
That's interesting. I haven't seen that use case at the moment, but I can absolutely understand where you're going with it. To me, it sounds very similar to a privileged access type escalation, where perhaps there's an element of needing to keep a human in the loop to authorise additional activity for an agent that's appropriate, and perhaps that's one way of approaching it.
How do we deal with people who think that agents should be allowed to self-approve an escalation? Because I've been having this conversation now with people who say, oh yeah, I'm going to walk into my office and I'm going to fire up some agents, whereas previously I might have had 8 or 9 people in this room, and I'm going to give those agents tasks and they're going to go off and do all these things. Well, those 8 or 9 people would have access to things that you don't have, but those agents, if they start with my permissions, now need all those others. Somebody's got to grant that. So their solution is to allow them to self-grant. Surely that's just malware under a different name.
There is going to be a challenge between one end of the scale vibe coding and the Wild West and a free-for-all, being so controlled and constrained that ultimately the value is lost in some of that capability. There's got to be a middle ground. I don't know what that looks like yet, but I can see that IGA and PAM play a key role in that.
Key role in what? Because if you don't see where that might play out at the moment, do we have a roadmap to get to? Because we don't want it so locked down it becomes unusable. We know that the only thing that that will result in is people going and shadow IT and completely screwing us. We don't want it Wild West, because we might as well just take all security controls off and let every man and his dog come into our system. What roadmap is there with IJ and PAM, or maybe some other form of technology and set of processes, to get us to a balance?
It's something that needs to emerge, and at the moment we only have those, not necessarily the legacy models, but we've only got the privileged access, the IGA type, those models, and then the Bella Padula, those kind of security models of you can write down but not up, and those kind of things that we've got in place. I don't see what the roadmap is at the moment to managing that, but it's something that will emerge over time in the same way that Bring Your Own Device has. We've got to find a balance between enabling users and making sure that we manage and control that data.
If we look at the speed with which AI agents are arriving and the length of time other technologies have taken to get at least a reasonable level of adoption, we know we don't have time. Do we allow AI to teach us how to do this better, or do we need a whole new industry approach, and if so, who would drive that?
It reminds me of Sam Altman telling us that when we get to artificial general intelligence, we're going to ask it what the business case is for creating that, without suggesting that we throw ourselves at the feet of our AI overlords. We may be at that point where these things have gone past us and we need to start relying on them, but we've got to keep the human in the loop to bring some sense to it. One of my biggest concerns about the use of agents and LLMs is not only can they move faster than us, so giving them bad instruction just creates more chaos faster, but hallucination and grounding is really difficult. Making sure that these things aren't taking us off in the wrong direction with things can be a real challenge.
Where does Xaliant go next with all this?
Our focus really is on helping businesses go through that transformation of that identity-driven network and security capability. If we put it in the context of AI, some are all in, guns blazing, let's just go for it. Some are really held back by a fear of, if we give these things access to all of our data and assets, then we don't really know what's going to happen and we're too scared to find out the answer to that. From our perspective, the starting point in that journey is twofold. One is understanding what things should have access to, and you also then have to spend time classifying the assets, because it gives someone an entitlement to a system, but what they're able to do with that, that's more traditional IGA. But when we look at things like DSPM, categorising your data, labelling it and making sure that those entitlements are correct is, for me, the two key parts of that journey. As we look at the network and security transformations that we have been doing, we understand that they're relatively easy. They can be one time, or they're a much slower cycle in that you might replace your firewalls every 3 years, or you might shift from on-prem firewalls to cloud-based firewalls. Identity is a much longer and ongoing journey. From our perspective, we like to look at starting with an MVP and maturing that over a longer period. Depending on the business, that identity journey might be a 5-year journey, and ultimately that's been a challenge for businesses to try and look at a program and potentially feel like they don't get any value until the end of that program. Really, our approach is to look at that MVP and start delivering value along the journey. That helps shareholders feel more bought in, that they're getting some value out of that. But the reality is, starting somewhere, and I've got a colleague who talks about thinking big and acting small, so breaking it into bite-sized chunks and making progress along that curve is important, and that's how we're seeing success, and it's how we're seeing our customers succeed in that journey.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how companies up their game, increase the cadence of reviewing identity in order to accommodate AI in particular.
It's been difficult from an investment perspective for businesses with identity. It's not cheap. It's very often sat in a CISO budget trying to justify a big program that, particularly if we look at something like IGA, it's only been a CISO previously that's needed to understand who's got access to what. It's not been seen as the business enabler it could be. We're starting to shift that narrative now.
There's another side to that, isn't there? It's old technology. It's identity. We've always had identity. Why are we spending more money on trying to fix identity? It's like when you talk to people about a data center and you talk about UPSs. Oh, they're boring. They've always been there. They're fundamental building blocks. And I think, sadly, identity's become seen as a fundamental building block, and we don't pay perhaps enough attention.
It has. In some ways, AI is helping that side of the industry because it's unlocked a completely different side of a requirement and a use case for identity, because we see that not just from the way that people are interacting with LLMs, but the agentic side of it is clearly starting the conversation for the non-human identity that typically might have been stuck in supply chain or OT or retail and logistics, manufacturing type operations. It's shifted non-human identity outside of those verticals and into the rest of the industry.
I think it's going to be interesting next year to see where identity goes. Dave, thank you for spending time with me.
Pleasure. Thank you.